Blog Talk Radio.
Rumors spreading round in that Texas town about the shack outside the games. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
Everyone, welcome you all to Drive Through HR, and first of all, happy Monday to all of you. I hope you guys are having a great week right ahead of at this point. And today, luckily we have a good climate, so that is a bonus. In fact, we were talking about it during the pre-show. So we have William Tinkup available with us today. William, how are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
So I hope your last week journey was a great time that you had.
It was sexy. It was sexy. I was in Baton Rouge on a Sunday and Monday and then part of Tuesday for Louisiana Sherm. Now, Louisiana Sherm, Law Sherm 14, this was my fourth year in a row, and I was thinking about it. Only HR Tech is a conference that I've been to more consistently. So, like, you know, Erie or, you know, HR Florida or Illinois Sherm or pick any of the other shows out there, Louisiana Sherm is a show that I've been to 4 years in a row. So after that, then I went to Ultimate Software, had their Analyst Day and User Conference in Las Vegas. So then I flew to Las Vegas for Tuesday through Friday. So I'm glad to be back. That's what I can tell you, Nisha.
Yeah, we are glad to have you. And, yes, Louisiana Sherm Conference, I love that community. So without further ado, let's talk to our guest. I have a wonderful guest, a friend of mine. He was in India. Now he moved to United States. Mohit Garg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nisha. Glad to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Well, we are glad to have you here. So how are you doing? How are you finding the U.S. world?
It's been wonderful. You know, I have been spending quite a bit of time, even last year, out here, meeting with many HR colleagues, understanding how this market. I've spent time both in India and the U.S., and it's interesting how there are certain similarities on issues, and it's interesting how some of the environment contrasts. So it's been a great learning journey, and looking
great.
Forward to learn more.
Great. So to our audience, so those who don't know of you, it would be great if you can talk a little bit about who you are and what you do, and so they can learn a little bit more about you.
Certainly, Nisha. Glad to start with a quick introduction. I'm the co-founder of a software company called Mindtickle. Mindtickle is a learning platform which is cloud-based, and we believe a next-generation platform. We're really looking to flip the model of learning, make it a lot more exciting, engaging, user-contributed, use social techniques and gamification to make dry content very exciting. And, you know, today I also want to talk about my journey of where we started about 2.5-3 years back, where we said, hey, you know, gamification and technology is the answer. And I think we've matured over the years. We've learned a lot about how aligning the interests of each participant in the learning journey has so much more value to add, and gamification and social is just one of those techniques. So it's been a very interesting journey at Mindtickle. Just so that you know, Mindtickle has been recognized as the number one platform for use of engagement techniques in HR at the Gamification Summit at 2013. Very proud of what we have accomplished in a short period of time, but there's a long way to go.
Wow. Well, first of all, congratulations for that. It's a huge success that you have achieved right now. And I know you've always been an award-winning organization and you're an entrepreneur that is so great. And now you've moved to United States, especially a different culture, different environment, and different business challenges for you right ahead. So what's keeping you up at during this time, especially when you go through these all changes?
Sure, Nisha. I'd love to talk about that. And I've had the benefit of having worked, not just visited, but worked in four continents. So I think a lot of my experience and much of the insights and learnings, you know, what I think is really insightful, I would like to share, is based on my experience across these different contexts. And I've been a Big Four consulting firm, and I've seen how learning as organizational imperative has worked there. Been in Silicon Valley startups, part of very early small teams. And I think what's keeping me up, or what's keeping up my typical client at night, is to figure out what is a good way of thinking about the enterprise learning model. And when I think of enterprise learning, I find that over a period of time, you know, if you look at any software, you look at any business function, right? It's driven by fear or greed. Maybe that's not the right way to put it, but it's the downside of having a regulatory slap on your face. It's the downside of having non-compliance, which is what I call fear. And greed is the upside, which comes from business impact, right? Business impact from better productivity, business impact from better onboarding, business impact from much more alignment between the employees and the organizational objectives. And the more I've looked at this space for the last 5 years or so, done a lot of research and user studies, we've realized that the space has been driven a lot by fear than greed. It's been driven a lot by compliance than business impact. And I generalize, so I'm not saying every organization does that. So we at Mindtickle have been looking at how do we create enablers for the HR, the learning and development leaders to take control of business impact, how they demonstrate the tie-in between learning effectiveness and how do you move the needle on business results. So that's been really top of mind for me over the last, I would say, many months.
So most of the audience is going to be familiar with LMS through the years.
Yeah.
You know, basically the databases of old, of where we put kind of our formal content, if you will. And I would tell you, after studying the LMS sector for a while, LMS implementations, you know, they used to unravel, not today but as much, but they used to unravel based on whether or not you had content. So you'd roll out this usually really clunky, big, expensive LMS, and if you didn't fill it with content, then it would kind of fail, you know. And this is the formal content. So, you know, you guys are a new breed. You come at it, obviously. You're a second, third generation kind of social learning and learning play. How do you kind of cross over and get to, how do you get to informal content? And then how do you deal with content in general? How do you get people to want to put content into the system?
Right. Willem, that's a great question. And I would say this has been a big part of us unlocking the value of what we are setting out to do. I think this is literally a million-dollar question there. And to your point, yes, you know, a library is no good with the books in it, right? So until you populate a library, it's a bunch of shelves. And that's true for an LMS or any learning software for that matter. So the vision we have been working on, we have had great support from our clients and advisors and mentors, has been about unlocking the power of subject matters who may not necessarily be in the traditional instructor role. And what I mean by that is one area of that is informal learning. So that's been talked about over the years. It's been about social learning, discussion groups, Twitter-like exchanges of informal information. So I would hope that the audience has a little more exposure to that. I think Twitter itself has been cited as one of the top learning mediums. So one is informal learning. informal learning, which is democratic, contributed by a large number of contributors, not just formal instructors. That's one way of unlocking this value. And the second area, which has huge room for improvement, is to make the content creation process lot more intuitive and geeky or techy. You don't need to be an instructional designer to create a video from your iPhone today. So what's stopping people, the subject matter, from contributing content by recording on their iPhone, screencasting their presentations on their computers? And a lot of it is the change management or the user behavior. How do you make people more open to contributing knowledge? And second is people are looking for answers or saying, what is a good way of doing this, right? So that's where we come in. We have been developing best practices around how do you create a model for informal content, what tools and technologies help with just the basic creation process, and how do you curate this content into logical courses and not make it dry, right? How do I bring gamification into the picture to make sure that this content, although it's not created in production-level quality video, is still engaging and makes a lot more sense to the end audience. So I'd say it's a combination of informal learning through social platforms along with enabling the subject matter experts to create the content themselves using very easy tools and techniques.
So for the audience, make sure you all take a look at the website. It's mindtickle.com. It's a beautiful website and it explains kind of what they do. Let's talk about the edges, because for me, a lot of these technologies, there's a moment in which they don't work.
Right.
And
right.
It's usually kind of how do you get to the point where you know where it works well and where it doesn't. So, sure. You know, in your experience over the last couple of years, where does it really uses – like great uses of the technology, and where do you think, people try to use this for that, it doesn't really work there. Like, you keep trying to get it to use it, it just will, you'll never get the uptick because it just won't work there. So give me the edges of where it works well and where you don't think it works as well.
So there are, I would say, clear winners here, William. The clear winners are where the use of this technology, along with the concepts that we just talked about, are able to demonstrate some clear business impact in a short period of time. Because that's where we're going to start the positive snowball. You're able to demonstrate some impact within 2 to 3 months or hopefully within a few weeks, and then you get everybody's attention, everybody's believer. And now you have organizational muscle behind it. The managers supporting it, the leaders are supporting it, and soon enough, the employees also get behind the initiative. So it's about identifying use cases or areas where you can bring about a quick impact. And there are a few which I'll enumerate where we have seen very quick impact. One is area of new employee onboarding, and especially within onboarding orientation. We have seen such low-hanging fruit in fixing some very, very fundamental, rudimentary problems with the onboarding or orientation of new employees. That can be addressed through a social and gamified and a new age learning experience. So think about the millennials being added to the workforce. Now, millennials, they're wired differently. They don't want to wait 3 weeks or 2 weeks to have critical mass for a classroom session, right? They would like that process to start right away, or you could even leverage time between day of offer and day of joining, right? Sometimes 3 weeks, sometimes 3 months. So we see lots of low-hanging fruit and opportunity to cut days to productivity and improve the new hire engagement by using online techniques, online learning techniques for engaging new hires. Huge opportunity. Mindtickle itself has onboarded over 60,000 new hires on its platform, and the response has been amazing. Right, we are very, very encouraged by this use case. A couple other I'll mention quickly without getting into a lot of detail. One is sales training. So how do you enable your sales force to not only get onboarded, which is similar to what I said earlier, which is baseline information about the company's products, services, sales process, but also how do you get them updated? They're on the floor. They're on the road all the time. If your field staff is mobile all the time, then they're not going to have time to log into your LMS. Then how do you push updates on mobile? How do you use the advantage of the competitive spirit of the sales professional to create gamified competition, which further enhances the motivation to consume the material. So these are a couple of examples that I can share with you where it worked very, very well. Areas where I have not seen this work well so far, and I'm sure there's a way to do it. I'm not saying it cannot be done, is executive coaching, leadership training, in the areas where you are willing to spend like lots of high touch points, bring in like the best instructor out here, because these people, their every minute, every time on that classroom is so valued that you don't want to put them on online platforms sometimes, right? You would rather go high touch with them. So I've seen this fail not because the platform wasn't suited for it. I've seen it fail because these programs have been designed in the past so high touch that taking into an online environment is a huge shock. It's like such a contrast for the participants that they haven't shown as much adoption. So I hope I'm making sense, but these are two different contrasts that I see where I've seen it work very well in some areas where it may not be the best idea.
Well, it's wonderful to know some of the adoptions that you said from which industry to which function, but if you can talk a little bit more about, you know, when we have this emerging blending learning models or blending learning systems that most of the organizations are using at this point, because some people, they might be good when it comes to a classroom training. Some people are not probably adapted to the, you know, online learning management system. As you said, Gen Y, they are, or millennials, they are more into, you know, getting everything on the fingerprint or something like that. So when it comes to a blending or blended learning management system, what do you think are going to be the advantages for the organizations?
Yeah, Nisha, there I'll challenge just a little bit, because the traditional definition of blended model has been there are certain things you do online and there are certain things you do offline.
Mm-hmm.
And increasingly, we are of the belief that the model, which may be like William was saying, 2.0 or 3.0 model, is the flipped model. So not really a blended view of the world, but a flipped view of the world. So if you know about the Palo Alto school, they're using a flipped classroom model on the lines of what Salman Khan Academy had recommended. And they've seen great success with that. And let me talk about that model a little bit. That model says that classrooms are meant for students to have discussions, ask questions. It's not meant for delivery of the course material itself.
Mm-hmm.
And building on this model, they encourage the students to consume the content at their own time in a self-paced environment before they come into classroom, and they have a lot more active discussion in the classroom. And the reason this has been seen as a superior way of education, I'm not claiming that this is the only way that works, but this seems to be working well, is that now you have the in-person contact time being leveraged most effectively for what face-to-face contact really helps with. Face-to-face contact helps the most with discussions, and where you can bounce off ideas, brainstorm, and take learning into higher depth, right? So you can go from level 2 to level 3. You can go a lot more deeper in an in-person discussion very easily and very efficiently. So to your original question about the blended model, I would say more and more we are seeing both in new hire onboarding and in sales training, two areas that, you know, I've been spending a lot of time on, is I'll explain how this model has worked very well, right? Think of new hires. You deliver them the company's vision, leadership team, culture, even policies as videos, presentations, give them exercises, online exercises. They're going to become aware, right? This may not have been internalized to the fullest extent, but what you have effectively done is, even before the day of joining, made them aware, communicated your employer value proposition. And then when the leaders get into the classroom to welcome the new hire, they are going to ask a lot more meaningful questions. They're not going to use that 1 hour to absorb a presentation about the company was founded in a certain year, we went IPO in this year. They already know that. They're going to ask questions about, hey, how does my role contribute to the success of the organization? It's going to be a lot more interactive. So that's an example of how a new hire onboarding, for example, would benefit from a flipped approach. Similarly, in sales training, imagine the sales hire or the existing sales employee already getting the functional information about the sales process and the product in an online medium, and then using the face-to-face time for mock pitches, for simulation, for being challenged by the VP of sales on, okay, what if a customer threw this objection at you? Let's do a rehearsal of how would you respond to that. So it's about aligning the learning process to the needs of the business, and we are seeing more and more that a flipped approach, how you can turn the classroom session to be a lot more focused on absorption of the deep concepts, that's going to make a lot more sense as we go along.
Wonderful. I know you talked a little bit about gamification in the beginning, but then it would be great to talk, you know, to know the intersecting point when it comes to LMS, social learning, and where does gamification stay?
Sure, certainly, Nisha. Now, I am a gamification enthusiast. I have been interested in this field even before this term was coined. I'm an avid gamer as well, so this comes from personal passion and interest. And first, I want to draw the difference between serious gaming or simulations and gamification. The reason I say that is because in a lot of the interactions I have had in conferences or, you know, clients even, the two get mixed up. So let me quickly draw out the differences between the two. So think of serious gaming and simulations as full, complete titles, right? So you have War of the Clones for, let's say, you put in the content for banking simulation, and you created like a title like War of the Clones, which is banking simulation. The bank employee goes in, interacts with all these staff, and interacts with customers within the simulation. Now, that is a title approach. It's an end-to-end immersive simulated experience. There is a space for that. There is a value to that. But the challenge with such an approach is it's not that agile. As your content changes, as your policies change, it's very hard to change these titles. Whereas gamification takes a very structured and modular approach. So what it says is we are going to use elements of the game as opposed to a whole game title itself. We're going to use motivators. We're going to use points, medals, badges, leaderboards, tipping, whatever mechanics leverage a certain part of human behavior to incent the intended behavior. So for a banking training, I'm not going to create a full 3D, 2D simulation where I have character. Instead, what I'm going to do is have a more of traditional delivery where I have videos, PowerPoints, or PDFs, and I'm going to have some exercises, quizzes, different variety of quizzes. My article even uses lifelines and hints in the quizzes to make it somewhat on the lines of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where the participants get to phone a friend. And use these very scalable mechanics to make more traditional content delivery a lot more exciting. So that way you can repurpose your existing content, a lot more agile. As the content changes, you can make the modifications very, very easily. Keep your content up to date, which is a huge challenge in some of the flash-based simulation environments. So now that I've brought up the distance between the two, sorry, you were saying, William, was that a question?
Oh, no, I was going to say, you're unlocking something for me because it's almost like the best games, the best elements of gamification, if you will, doesn't feel like gamification. Like, it's the real cheesy stuff. When people hear that word, they think of the real cheesy aspects of gamification. But you're being gamed, especially if you're on, if you're in social and you're doing things in social and LinkedIn, Facebook, you know, Twitter, Instagram, and whatnot. You're being gamed. I mean, you're part, you're using, they're doing all kinds of things around the edges, but doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like you're doing anything. You know what I mean? Like, you want to do those things. You want to like photos. You want to share content. And I think that's the best elements of gamification is when you just don't know that. Like, if you're just doing things because you feel like it's right, you feel like you're helping out the organization, et cetera.
Right. Well said, William. And that's about creating intrinsic motivation wherein the learner or the employee feels like they're being carried along a path of success in the program. So the feedback is really important as well, right? So the feedback can be implicit. Like you said, LinkedIn, you don't know that you're actually being gamed. So feedback can be implicit. But sometimes explicit feedback, congratulating and celebrating your success on completing a module, we have seen creates a lot of positive reinforcement as well.
What do you think about, like, the concept of the meritocracy and content, mm-hmm. meaning the content inside these systems that people like the most might not be what we intended. Mm-hmm. You know, we might put content into the system and think, yeah, that's okay, but, you know, it'll be over here. But if people mm-hmm. really love it, share it, consume mm-hmm. it, read mm-hmm. it, you know, whatever,
right.
what's your take on just kind of meritocracy and content?
That's an interesting point, William. So I haven't thought about it this way, but it's an interesting point that you make. And to that, I would respond by saying that there's always been a lot of value in open markets. And if you start thinking of content within an organization or even massive online open courses, if you start thinking of them as efficient markets from an economic standpoint, then you will soon realize that the content which boils up to the top is the meritocratic content. And you will find segmentation where there is long-tail content that few people swear by because that's really important for them, but maybe it's long-tail. Online enables you to create discovery for the fat-tail content. That content is on your face. When you go to YouTube, you see the most popular videos right in your face. But that doesn't mean you can't discover the long-tail content. So I would say the online medium does a great job of addressing the mainstream content needs and also enables discovery and search of the long-tail content, which, that, let's say, a person in an organization needs content on drill bits of a certain mechanical type, which only 10 people in that organization care about. It's not to say that the content is not important, but you've got to make it discoverable for those 10 people and not make it in the face of, like, 10,000 people who in the organization who don't care about it.
Right. Okay, we've got about 3 minutes left. I want to ask you your take. If you fast forward 10, 15, 20 years, what does learning look like in the future?
Yeah, I'd love to share my view, and this is something which we talk about all the time in the Mindical team. And there are a few things which are very, very clear to us. Learning is going to be bite-sized and mobile. That is for sure. It is going to be unintrusive and unstructured. So which means, think of Netflix as a behavior, right? We are more and more. So my kid, right, he's so young, he only watches Netflix today. He's not going to know what his scheduled programming like. He's not going to know that there's a show which comes at 7 o'clock every day. He's alien to that concept. So I certainly think that when it comes to learning, 10, 15 years from now, the audience for learning at that point is going to look at learning as on-demand, self-paced. I pull the learning. I'm at the center of the learning. And lastly, I am very confident that it is going to be a lot more social. There is the value of platforms such as Twitter, which I see, you know, the concept of quick updates being pushed for informal learning, bite-sized learning, and sharing amongst the learner community. That is going to be another important part of the mix of how learning would shape out in the next decade or so.
Great. Well, Mohit, it's been a fantastic conversation today, and thank you so much for being here with us today. So where can our audience can come and find you or probably send you a note and connect with you on social?
Great. I'd love to hear from the audience on Twitter. My handle is M-O-H-G-A-R. Look forward to the conversations, and please feel free to send your questions my way. I'd be glad to respond to them and look forward to the discussion.
Great. So we look forward to having you once again soon at Drive Through HR at some point, and wish you all the best for your new endeavor in the United States. To our audience, stay tuned. We'll talk to you all tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks, William. All right. Bye-bye. Have a good day, all.